This is Glenn. I'm here with my regular co-host, Daniel.
Hey, how's it going?
As well as a very special guest, my lovely fiance, Megan.
Hello.
And I gotta say, it was no small feat getting Megan onto the podcast here, but I think for this movie in particular, this was one for which she was uniquely qualified to.
Subject matter expert.
Exactly. That, the SME, as they say at
yes.
Boeing, right?
The SME indeed.
Because she is, in fact, fluent in Japanese, and the movie that we just saw at SIFF, the Seattle International Film Festival, is a film called Little Rock. Now, this is a film about a pair of Japanese siblings, adult siblings, Rintaro and Atsuko, played by actors of the same names. And they basically are sort of sidetracked on a road trip. They want to go see Manzanar and the internment camp as well as San Francisco. But they get stuck in this little desert town when they're in California, I might add, not Arkansas, when their rental car breaks down. And Rintaro speaks a little bit of English. Atsuko does not speak any English. And it's kind of just this culture shock kind of tale of them kind of making their way through this small town. So, Megan, I'll put it to you first. As someone who could actually understand a lot of the unsubtitled Japanese that was in this film, what did you think of this film, and how was your experience different from ours?
I really liked this film. The thing that I thought was the best about the unsubtitled conversation portions was that it was still a conversation. It wasn't people saying, "How are you doing today?" and the Japanese kids responding, "Purple monkey dishwasher." It wasn't timed exactly right. Sometimes the responses didn't come immediately after the questions, but they were always talking about the same thing. There was always a theme to the conversation, and I really thought that was nice.
Well, indeed, actually, one of the actors was present for a Q&A after this screening, and he mentioned that both Rintaro and Atsuko, the actors, are fluent in English. So they were doing some very the film was scripted, but their reactions, as far as being able to understand but being forced to pretend that they don't understand, came off as extremely authentic, I thought. What did you think, Daniel?
Yeah, I could have been easily fooled to think that they didn't speak any English at all. Or very little.
I think this film is unique in that it has a number of first of all, it's sort of a quasi romance from the perspective of at least one of its characters.
Yeah, romance with America.
Yeah, well, it's okay. So you were going a different direction though.
Well, yeah, because clearly the brother Rintaro, he's interested in the journey, but not necessarily. He doesn't show any love towards America. You know, and meanwhile, his sister is very much, you know, she falls for a local boy, and she befriends, you know, the local populace, and she parties with them, and she immerses herself in that culture, much more so than her brother does.
Well, it's interesting. I thought one of the things I found the most fascinating about this film was the parallels between their various attitudes about each other, about their respective cultures. I mean, we get little glimpses of it whenever we see the two siblings together, all their dialogue is subtitled. Whereas whenever we see it's just one of them interacting with one or two of them interacting with the Americans, their dialogue tends to be unsubtitled. And they were saying some of the same things about, or at least exhibiting some of the same attitudes toward each other. For instance, the brother Rintaro basically said, "Hey, these people are not your friends." And sort of the unspoken thing was, "They're just trying to sleep with you." which I would say, as an American watching how these guys were acting, I have to agree. I mean, they were
definitely,
they're like, you know, make sure she comes to the party, you know, like
have
this
another
is,
beer,
yeah, have another beer, smoke some weed. Now at the same time, she obviously seemed into that because she ended up kind of going along with it with one of the local boys, but But at the same time, they kind of have this perspective of having kind of ulterior motives of, in getting to know them straight away. But also Rintaro is kind of seeing right through it and is saying, you know, these people aren't your friends. These are people who drink all day and don't have jobs.
Yeah, he plays pretty coy with them. Like, you know, he goes along with it, and he seems like, oh, he's just like his sister, kind of befriending them. But yeah, he knows what's going on. He's just, in a way, using these people.
I'm curious what, Megan, what you thought of the relationship between Atsuko and the two men in her life, as it were, in this film, not including her brother, of course. There's the local boy that she actually has a little bit of a fling with. And then there's another character, Corey, who, now the reason I don't actually even recall the name of the guy that she actually hooks up with, but he's kind of a non-entity. Like, we don't really get to know him that much.
Yeah, you don't know him at all.
But this other guy, Corey, who is also played by an actor whose first name is Corey, is just a... I found him to be an utterly fascinating character. I mean, this is just a completely self-deluding kind of guy, but he has this kind of back and forth, these conversations with Atsuko, and I'm very curious what your take on those was, especially as somebody who could understand what Atsuko's side of the conversations were.
I mean, like I said before, those conversations weren't anything out of the ordinary. She was definitely responding in ways that she would have responded if she could understand what he was saying. What I really liked about his character was the way he was just deluding himself, and the language barrier did not change that at all. He was viewing himself how he wanted to view himself. He was living in his own little world, regardless of what others thought about him or said. And the fact that she couldn't understand what he was saying, and he was still insisting that things were real or that things were there, even if they weren't, was pretty interesting.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, here's a character who's stuck in a small town. He doesn't have a job, really. He owes a tough guy $150.
Yeah, let's not spoil the reason for why he owes that money, but suffice to say, it seems very fitting for his character.
He thinks himself as an artist and a model and an actor, and he's
just all around Renaissance man.
Essentially, and the relationship's the same deal. He views himself as, you know, her boyfriend, and views them as being together, even though it's clearly like him projecting. And, you know, everyone in town kind of sees that he's not any of these things and mocks him. And so he's very isolated, very much in his own head.
Yeah, I mean, this is a character that I don't think any member of the audience is going to want to admit how much they identify with him. If anybody has had that experience, Megan is laughing over there. It's one of those things where anybody who has deluded themselves into thinking that they have a relationship with someone,
you know who that reminded me of? You. It was like every woman that you would come in contact with growing up.
Don't worry, I'm actually engaged to him. I've got the ring. I want to talk about this for a second because I did not identify with him at all, but I think that's because
you're a woman.
I'm a woman, and he just resonated with me as the stereotypical nice guy. Even though we know that he's probably not straight, and even though we know that he has this crush on this girl who doesn't understand what he's saying, oh my god, I'm not saying that all men are like this. I'm not saying that the self-pitying thing is only something that men do, but the whole, like, but I'm so nice, why doesn't she like me? And the answer is because you're a whiny person who's difficult to be around, but you can't admit that to yourself, and that was exactly what he was portraying.
I was that guy early in college. Like,
I think anybody who goes into film podcasting was that guy at some point. But at the same time, I think that casting this kind of self-deluding relationship, which is something that so many people can identify with, anybody who's been in a situation where they have liked someone and that person did not like them, and they will just kind of say whatever they have to themselves to convince themselves that it's something real. The fact that there's a language barrier added in there as well, and he's kind of responding to what she's saying as if he understood her, and he's like, right, you know, just kind of generic responses like "right on" or "that's great," "oh yeah, I like you too, I'm glad you like it." Like he's kind of putting words in her mouth, and to kind of add that dimension of it to his own self delusion with their relationship, I just found fascinating.
You know, I've been to Japan, and I mean, I only went for like 2 weeks, but you know, I didn't speak any Japanese, and when you're around people where you can't really communicate with them, you know, verbally, you try to read, like, body language, you try to, like, you know, take the facial cues, you know. Like, I had several conversations with people in Japan, you know, about, like, prices on things or like where to buy tickets, and I didn't know what the hell they were saying, and they didn't know what the hell I was saying, but I read their body language and tried to figure out maybe, like, you know, pointing to the right thing, and maybe, you know, that would trigger something. But it was all in my head, like, oh, we had a good conversation. I know where to go for that now.
I mean, as a bit of a language nerd, and this is something I'm sure you can identify with, Megan, what I was kind of almost wondering going into this film was, would we see the kinds of things that people would do in place of verbal language? Would we see body language? Would we see people kind of trying to use simpler words or trying to kind of mime things? But we didn't really see any of that. That really was not at all what the movie was about. It was just kind of communicating in the universal language of, you know, let's get drunk, let's fuck around, you know?
Yeah, I thought most of the movies could be like that.
Yeah. No, I disagree. I saw a lot of nonverbal communication. I mean, none of the conversations that happened in this movie, none of the dialogues were particularly deep. It was all simple conversations about simple things, and the reason why Corey was able to delude himself into thinking that their communication was working was because it was. I mean, he was very accurately saying, oh, I like what you did with your pants. And she said, oh, you like how I cut my pants? You noticed? And it was working. I mean, they weren't speaking the same language, but they were communicating. And I think that helped, I don't know, push that character into believing that he had a relationship that he didn't. But there was tons of communication. Oh, my God. She was talking with the Mexican immigrant cook.
This is a guy who doesn't speak much English, but speaks in Spanish primarily, and between the two of them, speaking Spanish and Japanese, both unsubtitled for us American audiences, but, you know, it just added more to it.
There was a lot of communication in that scene for me.
This is something that, that, you know, I don't want to bring up Babel, so I'm not going to, but we don't really part of why I didn't pick up on as much communication, and I wonder how much of this was just that. Feel free to refute me on this point, but I wonder how much of this was just because you could understand her speaking Japanese as well, because we get a glimpse into how much she is affected as a character by this relationship in the very last scene. Now, I would not dream of spoiling this conversation, but it's basically a conversation between her and another character, and we finally see subtitles on everything that she's saying, and we really get a glimpse into her perspective. And I think prior to that point, we were just left to guess as to what her motivations were, as to what her interest was in either of these men that she gets involved with, and so forth.
I'm going to chalk that up to a cultural difference. I think Japanese people are not as expressive on their faces as Americans. That's a big thing. And to some extent not as expressive in what they choose to say. I mean, I am used to it, so I got a lot out. I didn't feel disconnected from her thought process. And it wasn't just because I could understand what she was saying, it was because I could see her expressions on her face and kind of tell how she was feeling, that I think it's hard for Americans to pick up on. She did a beautiful job, by the way.
Well, I was going to say, like that perspective, as far as not really getting into the emotional life of that character, just because we can't understand the language. That I'm saying that as someone who adored this performance from Atsuko. She had a different last name, but it's the same first name. But yeah, she was fantastic. Corey, who the actor who was there at the Q&A was not Corey, but he assured us that Corey is very much like this in real life. So he sounds like a fascinating individual.
So I think we're missing out on the whole point of them going there, which was to visit the internment camp.
Yes.
Now, that wasn't jarring for me, because I figured they had a reason to be there, and once they got to that point, I was like, okay, it makes sense. You know, they're there for their grandfather, and to understand their background. But was it jarring for you at all?
Yeah, I think I found it unexpected. I mean, I thought the film was likely to end with just them leaving town, but it didn't really distract me. It didn't really take away from the film. It was their reason for being there, and so far as we get a bit of their backstory by way of these sort of voiceover letters that Atsuko is writing to her father, and I think it fit, and I think the sequence didn't it conveyed what it needed to convey, and it didn't last so long that it took away from the rest of the story. Like we got back to. We got back to, you know, her feelings on these people that she's met in the town pretty quickly. And I think that this kind of parallel story of them being interested in Japanese internment fits with the rest of it, fits with their interactions with American culture.
No, the actor that was present for the screening, he said that the director, that was what the movie was trying to really push across, was the internment camps, bringing it to the forefront of our minds as Americans, because we don't really talk about it that often in school.
See, I'm just going to have to bow out of that part of the discussion, because that was not my experience of going through school at all. Maybe it's just a Seattle thing, but of course you went to school in the same district. But
right.
In middle school, I remember reading Farewell to Manzanar, and I remember the only history we talked about with regard to World War II was internment camps. We didn't talk about the battles much. It was all about what happened stateside, and it was all about Japanese internment.
Yeah, I mean, maybe we were in different classes, but yeah, I didn't really learn too much about that until high school. Like, in middle school, they mentioned it. Like, I was aware of it, that it happened, but I didn't know the specifics.
In North Carolina, I was not even aware that it happened until I was in high school. We talk a whole lot about slavery. And I think it makes sense that geographically, right, you know, there's going to be more of a focus on the big issues that happened there.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair point. If you drive about a half hour south of Seattle to a town called Puyallup, which they have a lovely fairground there, but they also have the Washington State Fairground, which is actually the former site of an internment camp that was here in Washington State. So that's I mean, it's very much a part of our local history as well. So I can definitely see why that factored into it. But yeah, I would say final thoughts. If this movie is, I would say it is likely to find distribution. So if this movie comes to a theater near you, I will turn it to you guys. Who should see this movie? Who would enjoy it?
I think anyone would enjoy it. I mean, it's just really a delightful film.
I also think anyone would enjoy it. I got double the enjoyment because I could speak Japanese. I was really hoping to get more, like, inside jokes or you know, some other bit of inside information from it, but I didn't. Everything was very laid out and on the table, so I think that even if you don't speak Japanese, you're going to get a lot out of this film.
I mean, that actually pleases me to no end here, just because I feel like the experience that I got from this film was rich, and it felt like this complete both slice of life and also just kind of a look at these two cultures interacting. I think it was a delightful film. I think it was a very funny film. It works solidly as a comedy. I think most people would enjoy this film.
Yeah, you know, the Corey character really is just a great comedic character. Like, he's pathetic and he's sad, but he's just so funny and quirky. It's really funny.
Self-awareness whatsoever. Just he just puts himself out there, and what is out there is hilarious. So, well, with that, I think that brings us to the end of our discussion of Little Rock. Stay tuned, because there will be additional SIF materials available.
More SIF, please.
Yay.
You can also check out my reviews of Another Earth and Cosmos, which is also a film that you and I saw, Daniel, and I think we're going to touch on a little bit in the next podcast.
We could, yes. Well, I like to call it the migraine movie.
Thank you for tuning in to filmwonk.net, and have a good night. Oh.